This is Audible.
William Morrow and Harper Audio present When the Moon Hatched, a novel by Sarah A. Parker. Performed by Sarah Mullo Christensen and Fager Alcasey. A note before we begin. This book contains explicit content and dark elements that may be triggering for some. For a full list of warnings, please skip to the end credits. For a glossary, a family tree, and more, don't forget to download the accompanying enhancement PDF from your audiobook provider. For those who feel small and quiet, spread those wings and roar.
The world began with five. First was Kalis, god of ether, invisible to the naked eye. The empty space nobody thought about. Where matter formed, he was simply shoved aside. His baritone song was so full of substance, yet lacked it entirely. A lonely echo that haunted the empty space between near and distant suns, inaudible in its depth, no matter how loud he sang. Desperate to be noticed, it was he who offered an empty canvas for the others to fill. Boulder, god of ground, sculpted the sphere with one belted bellow, building a sturdy globe that did not spin, a world half-bathed in sunlight, sprinkled with a rich ripple of rust-colored sand, the other half eternally dunked in shadow so thick it seeped into the stone and cast it black. With more blunt and droning words, Boulder sculpted the terrain, creating dips, dollops, and cracks in the world, forging a wall that cut through the fade, where sunlight and shadow refused to meet, the sky a forever splash of pink, purple, and gold. The goddess of water came next. Rain fell upon the ground in a billion yearning teardrops of unrequited love, puddling in Baldur's dips, filling his gorges with her gushing affections. Upon the shaded side, she descended in a patter of heavy flakes, dusting the sharp mountain ranges in a frosty hug. Her love was a screaming torrent, the deep, gut-wrenching wail of an avalanche, the near silent cry of sprinkling rain. Her mournful song was so unlike that of her sister Claude, goddess of air, who hinged on the precipice of immeasurable madness. Her voice was a ribbon of silk, soft to touch, unless it turned to the side and slit you with its edge. Her whispered words swept past branches laden with leaves, tilling them into a flirty dance. Her violent shrieks ripped around sharp corners at a voracious speed, simply because she liked the sound. Unable to stand rain's somber still, Claude's gusty howls often turned the lough into a heaving mass that dumped upon the shore like a drum. Ignos was a glutton for Claude. The god of fire feasted on her, consumed her. Loved her so much, he could not breathe without her. His searing song was one of ferocious hunger and impassioned greed, but Claude could not be tamed by his rabid affections, even as he blazed jungles and gave her smoke to dance within, even as he melted bits of Baldur's stone until they were molten rivers of red, desperate to woo Claude with volcanic blasts that shook the sky. Bound to his mournful solitude, Kalis watched this all, jealous of the other creators for their ability to be seen, touched, or heard, but thankful to be part of something, anything. And he watched in quiet wonder as, upon this lush and fertile canvas he'd gifted his emptiness, life bloomed. A various cacophony of folk who littered the land and snow and sand, some with hearing sharper than the tips of their ears, making them privy to the four other elemental songs, a number of whom learned their languages, spoke them, found power in them. Others fell upon a silver book some say Kalis wrote in his desperation to be heard, who found a different form of power in those runes nobody could read or pronounce, discovering that the strange markings could be wielded, could mend bones, charm blood, glamour objects. Many beings filled all corners of the world, but none the creators were more proud of than the great winged beasts that lorded over the sky. The dragons. Upon the seemingly uninhabitable crown of the burn, where the sun's harsh rays bubbled skin into fleshy welts, the saber scythes thrived. Big, bulky beasts with black and bronze and ruddy scales, with ferocious aptitudes that could not be matched. They made Gondra their spawning ground. Some folks were brave enough to venture close, to raid a nest and snatch an egg. Brave or stupid. Less volatile than their distant kin, the molten maws found their home in the Fade, in Boggith, a foggy scrap of marshland that gobbled almost everything in muddy sulfuric burps. Their honed beaks were sharp enough to slash, their claws just as severe. Veiled with feathers as colorful as the ever-vibrant sky in their part of the world, no two molten maws bore the same glorious palate. To steal a molten maw's egg, one also needed to be brave or stupid. But perhaps a little less. Netherin, however, was almost impossible to raid. The chosen spawning ground of the ethereal and cunning moon plumes. Being farthest from the sun, Netherin was the darkest crown of the shade, bearing a cold so deep it could turn the blood of most common folk slow and sludgy. But not the moonplumes, with their luminous, leathery skin so chill to the touch, with their long, silky tails and eyes a crush of glitter and ink. Tucked amongst snow and ice and a hungry quiet that swallowed sounds, then spat them out like a warning roar, the moon plumes flourished, growing in number, strength, and brilliance. Only those as unhinged as Claude or bearing enough power to protect themselves would attempt to steal a moon plume egg. Most failed, consumed by the fearsome, thrashing beasts or the hostile land. Some succeeded, a celebrated few who used the dragons to wage wars for sprouting kingdoms. But as castles grew taller than mountains, and as kings and queens decorated their crowns with bigger, sparklier jewels, so too did folk learn how to shed dragon blood. For many moon plumes, molten maws, and saber scythes, their eternal lives were slashed. The creators did not expect their beloved beasts to sail skyward upon their end, for many of them to plant themselves just beyond gravity's grip, curl into balls and calcify, littering the sky with tombstones. With moons. They certainly did not expect those moons to fall not long after they found their lofty perch, for them to collide with the world in a clash of splintering doom that threatened to devastate everything that had come to be. It took 7 moonfalls before Cloud, Rain, Ignos, and Boulder realized Kalis was to blame. that his empty space, which yearned to be filled, was strong enough to displace a dragon from its resting place and rip it from the sky. It took them yet another moonfall to devise a plan to save the world they loved so much. Wielding empty promises and faithless vows, they lured Kalus into their trap and captured him. Subdued him. They sang their whipping, burning, breaking songs, mincing Kalus's essence into pieces small enough to trap in a cage of ebony crystal no larger than a pip, henceforth known as the Aether Stone. Threads of his silver cloak tore free as he thrashed and fought, but the other creators did not bother to round up the scraps, leaving them to tether to both poles of the world. A luminous aurora that spun around the globe, giving folk something to track their days and slumber time. Kalus himself was set within a sterling diadem embellished with a collection of runes that bore malicious strength, enough to keep him trapped within the stone for eternity, so long as the runes had something to feed on. A guardian. A mighty fey warrior, known for his strength and wisdom, was bestowed a gift from the creators themselves. Power immense enough that he was able to host the Aether Stone upon his brow and keep Kalus contained. A gift that passed down his familial line like skipping stones. Many aurora cycles passed, and more moons littered the sky. Stayed there. Peace eventually reigned. Despite a slew of tragedies and ill-timed deaths that swallowed the Aether Stone's catastrophic origin, its very meaning for existence becoming a scrambled myth passed around campfires or sung to babes to hush their fussing cries. Until one aurora rise. For the first time in more than 5 million phases, another moon fell.
Rave. Chapter 1. 5,165 phases after stone. I curl my shoulders forward, crumbling my posture into something that appears trodden, scared. Rounding a corner, I step onto the stairwell's bottom landing, chased by a parchment lark that flutters so close I'm surprised it doesn't nudge at me to pluck it from the air. As I twirl the thin iron ring on my middle finger, my gaze climbs the heavily armored guard blocking the gloomy tunnel ahead. Arms crossed, his shaved head almost brushing the curved ceiling, a flock of parchment larks nuzzling the door at his back. He's twice my size, boasting a scowl that appears to have permanently dented his face. His disapproving leer comes to rest on the nick sliced into my left ear, up near the tapered tip, like somebody with a tiny mouth bit a chunk from the outer shell. My clip.
No token, no entry,
he grinds out, immediately dismissing me as a lesser, a null, someone who doesn't hear any of the four elemental songs. I reach into my pocket, retrieving the stone token embossed on both sides with the prestigious club's insignia, a maw of stalactites biting in from all angles. Forging the slightest tremble, I hand it over, feeling the male's probing perusal cut me up and down as he flips the token, his blue armor clanking with the motion. I'm curious to know why he lets the larks flock the door rather than allow them straight in, but Rave is the outspoken one, and I'm not Rave right now. I'm Kamori Daffodon, I say, tone soft and submissive. Traveling bard.
From where?
Orig. A wall settlement I've never been to. Not that it'll stop me from rattling on about it if he asks for specifics. Preparation is my armor. Don it or die. He inspects the token, handing it back with a gruff,
No veils.
I glance up at him from beneath a blaze of feather-tipped lashes. part of my act. I'm part of the scheduled entertainment. I retrieve a roll of parchment from my pocket and nudge it toward him. I was warned about the no-veil rule, which is why I've only covered the bottom half of my face. Scowling, he unravels the scroll, his beady leer raking over my letter of hire so painfully slow I start to get a crick in my neck, impatience gnawing at me. Finally, his eyes widen with recognition.
Oh, you're the stand-in.
I offer a shy, demure nod when all I really want to do is bang his head against the wall. Hard. He re-rolls my scroll and hands it back, stepping aside to open the door.
Third level. Mind the waif. It's always extra hungry this late in the Aurora cycle.
My shiver is far from fake. I move into the Hungry Hollow's warm, smoky embrace, attacked by a rush of dense musk and the undertow of sulfur, the door banging shut behind me and the flock of dispersing parchment larks. Through a dark tunnel, I emerge at the pinched mouth of a vast, lofty cavern the shape of a stony lung. A swoop of steps leads me onto one of the many paths that web through a cluster of luminous springs, steam rising from their turquoise depths. Folks are draped against their steps, heads tipped while they languish in the lapping warmth. A pretty paradise for those who wield enough power or political sway to keep themselves on the cushioned side of the crown. I huff out a bitter laugh. Here, it's easy to pretend our colorful kingdom isn't nesting on a bed of bones. A freestanding staircase leads to the second floor, supported by mossy pillars. I head for it, weaving along the labyrinth of paths when a waft of steam congeals into a pale, lanky creature with eyes like ebony jewels. Shit, I mutter, pausing. Head swiveling unnaturally, the waif looks right at me, sniffs the air, then releases a gluttonous gasp.
Well, 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 isn't your soul a plump, juicy thing?
How kind of you to say. I'll just be on my way.
There are screaming spirits desperate to speak with you. How about a small suckle of your soul?
The creature asks, and I swear it sounds like it's salivating.
Then you can hear everything they have to say.
No fucking thank you. I'll pass. Heartily. Seeming to ignore my objection, it flits forward, gathering wafts of steam it uses to stretch in my direction, vaporous fingers reaching. I spin on my heel and hurry down another path, the hairs on the back of my neck standing on end. Looking over my shoulder, I spot the creature, now hunched over a male lazing against a spring's edge, sucking something shadowed from between his parted lips. A shiver nettles my skin. I quietly thank the creators that waifs are rare, haunting only drapes of mist where they nibble souls in exchange for messages from obliging dead. Can't think of anything worse. I'm certain the spirits so desperate to speak with me have nothing nice to say. Not that I can blame them. Thankfully, the creepy soul nibblers are easily distracted. I dash up a staircase, rising well above the reaching fingers of steam. The sounds of laughter and clinking glasses come to me as I emerge onto the second level scattered with scrippy tables. Folks are gathered about, puffing smoke sticks, drinking sparkly spirits, game shards fanned close to their chests. Dice scatter, piles of dragon bloodstone shoved from hand to hand. I cast my furtive gaze over their attire, some garbed in colorful, gem-encrusted gowns. Others wear finely tailored coats, feathered shapes barbered into shorn hairstyles, elemental beads hanging from their lobes. A boastful token of their ability to hear the different elemental songs. Red for Ignos, blue for Rain, brown for Boulder, clear for Claude. Beads aside, you can usually pick a high-ranking Fade Elemental from the other side of a room. Those who boast more than 10 colors on a single outfit, as if it'll make them mighty like the vibrant dragons that lord this kingdom's skies. The Great Molten Maws. Funny, since they'd be the first to bleed the beasts if the Bloodstone Mine ever ran dry. I'm halfway up a thin staircase chipped into the back wall when somebody tall, broad, and cloaked charges down from above. I pause, unable to see much of his face, bar his strong jaw brushed in a dark, well-shaped beard, his cloak's hood casting everything else in shadow. He doesn't slow, just keeps stalking down the stairs despite the fact that I'm dressed in a bold, bright red gown impossible to miss. I almost grit my teeth, remembering the metal cap coating my back molar just in time to avoid an impromptu activation of my secret weapon. He barely fits on the staircase himself, meaning moving past each other is going to be a tight shuffle. Lovely. Typical elemental bullshit, only thinking about themselves. Sighing, I curl my shoulders further forward and step to the side, reminding myself that I'm Kamori Daffodone, traveling bard from Aurig. I'm trodden, scared, and I'm absolutely not here to accidentally trip this male and watch him tumble down the stairs. Absolutely not. Back pressed to the wall, I keep my eyes down and wait for him to squeeze past, his heavy steps growing closer. So close, I'm struck with a smoky musk pinched with the smell of freshly split stone, softened with notes of something buttery. My breath catches, then shudders free, as if unwilling to part with the dense, luscious scent that might just be one of the best smells I've ever inhaled. He steps to the side, edging past. Pauses. I'm caught in his shadow like a flame in the dark, my heart pumping hard and fast, nudging up my throat with each lengthy second that ticks by. Why isn't he moving? I sidestep farther up the stairs, edging free of his atmosphere. Excuse me. Places to be, hands to sever. A dense, grated sound crumbles out of him, like it wrestled loose. The air shifts. I shift with it. Whipping around, I snatch his wrist with the speed of a lightning strike. Tension clogs the air, my gaze dropping to his large, heavily scarred hand, outstretched, paused mid-motion, as if he were just about to grab my veil and rip it free. The asshole. Though I can't see his eyes, I feel his penetrating stare with such probing intensity my lungs pack full of stones, the trail of his attention traversing to the rounded nick in my ear. Back to my eyes again. Sharp words gather on my tongue like thorns that I'm so tempted to spit at him. Then I remember that folk who stand up to high-ranking elementals end up as dragon chow. I swallow the words instead. Something that never feels good, no matter how often I do it. Loosening my grip, I dip my head and shuffle back a few steps, only stopping once I'm high enough that I'm looking down on the male. Far enough away that I'm less tempted to punch him in the throat for thinking he could unveil me. Apologies, I bite out, trying to sound submissive, failing miserably. The veil is part of my act. Silence ensues, thick like a tacky syrup. Move, rave. Easing free of his reach, I spin, hurrying up the staircase. I don't look back, flashing my scroll in token at the second wave of stone-faced guards, one of whom breaks away to escort me toward the stage. I'm led into the shadowy den, engulfed in the scent of peat smoke and mead, struck by the dramatic shift in atmosphere. Stone fangs jut down from the ceiling, cutting the space into arched segments brushed in rusty firelight spilling from blazing sconces. Dimly lit booths line the outer walls, bracketed with heavy curtains offering privacy for those who seek it. Null servers glide through the space, carrying trays topped with mugs of mead and other foggy beverages, dishing them out to jovial elementals gathered around stone tables pocked about the place. Tucked in the guard's shadow, I cut a shrewd glance over the eclectic patrons, frustration chewing at my nerves when I don't see the face I'm looking for. Please be in one of the booths. The guard leads me toward a central dais crowned by numerous stalagmites that resemble the bars of a cage, and I almost laugh, only because I couldn't imagine anything more morbidly appropriate. A thin, fine-boned female sits on a stool within, holding a white fiddle etched in luminous runes that probably encourage its sound to carry. She wears a simple, full-bustled gown similar to mine, but blue, and much looser around the discreet swell of her babe-laden abdomen. Eyes closed, she carves a melancholy tune while flakes of white light fall from the arched ceiling like a spill of snow. They settle on her gush of pale hair, extinguishing. Thanking the guard, I step up and perch on the stool beside the musician, her song reaching a lilting crescendo while I search for an amplifying stick.
"There Rooney's working on it," she whispers, lowering her fiddle, looking at me through piercing green eyes framed with blue feather-tipped lashes. "It was cutting in and out last cycle."
"Ah.
Shouldn't be long. I'm Levy, by the way. Kimori Daffodone, traveling bard from Auric." She flashes me a friendly smile that melts a little when her stare snags on something behind me. My heart leaps into my throat as a red-haired male strides past, weaving between the crowd, dressed in an immaculate sanguine coat, the color a perfect match to his red elemental bead on boastful display. Relief prickles through me, eager anticipation making my hands clench and unclench. Tarek Relakin. He takes us in, a hungry leer that slithers over my corset-clad bust before he continues toward a booth, three other males lounging within. Leaving the curtain open, he pours into animated conversation, sliding the occasional glance my way. Half-lidded looks that paint me out to be a well-presented piece of meat he'd love to gnaw on. "I see you, asshole." I catch sight of the cloaked male I encountered on the stairs, now moving through the dusky space. My heart plummets. He navigates past other patrons, my mind tangling into a messy knot while he makes for an empty booth at the back of the room. He was in such a hurry earlier when he almost barreled over me on his way down the stairs. Now he's back. Why? Business? Curiosity? Or did he catch the wrong impression from me on the stairs? Creators, is that why he's come back in? Because he likes slumming it with nulls and he's hoping for an easy lay? His head turns in my direction, gaze sweeping across the upper half of my face like a warm, soft-bristled brush, stiffening the air between us. I swallow a groan. I fought hard to have this operation approved. It means everything to me. If that asshole ruins our carefully laid plans, we may not get another chance for who knows how long, assuming another attempt is even approved. "You knew, honey? I haven't seen you here before."
Forcing my regard to soften, I look at Levy, her null clip evident in the ear poking free of her luscious mane.
"Just standing in." "I see."
She passes a glance around the room, lips barely moving as she whispers,
"That male with red hair who just walked by? His name is Lord Tarek Relakin. Stay well away. Many performers draw his attention, then disappear."
I widen my eyes in feigned shock.
"Really?"
She nods.
"The color of your dress, your demure disposition and long black hair?"
She sweeps her gaze down my body, up again.
"You're just his type." I don't tell her that's the point. The hope. At least it was until I acquired a cloaked observer now watching me from the back of the room, arms crossed, perched against the table of an otherwise empty booth. There's a reason this place hemorrhages null recruits, and it's not the shit wages, she bites out, flashing me a sour smile. I don't bother asking why she stays. The swell of her belly evidence enough. There are few options for a null to make a living in Gore besides slogging it out in the mines. No place for a pregnant female. Folk do what they can to get by, even if that means walking the fine line between a safe existence and a dangerous one. I appreciate the warning, I whisper, thinking of the mysterious tip-off Serene apparently received early in the day when our current plans were already in motion. Wondering if it was from Levy, too afraid to muddy her hands by getting involved with the Fear Duath and our sympathizing, albeit bloody, dealings. Understandably, there's no easier way to piss off our tyrant king than to liaise with his enemies. Aruni steps close, a white robe hanging off his slight body, dark hair pulled back in a low bun. He looks down his nose at me, and my gaze drops to the only button pinching his floaty garb in place, the symbol of an etching stick upon the round of wood, signifying his ability to etch basic runes. From the way he's leering at me, I expected two or three. Perhaps some specialty gift like bloodlacing or something else spectacular. At the very least, I thought his etching button would be more than elementary, made from silver or gold. Wish I could say that. I accept the amplifying stick with a demure dip of my head instead, wrapping my sweaty palms around the hollow length of metal littered with dots and swirls that emit their own radiance. I slice another glance at Tarek Relikan, my teeth gritted as I look back at the cloaked observer I certainly didn't account for, unease slithering through me. You okay? No. A parchment lark flutters close, tips its nose, tucks its folded wings, and plummets into my lap. Never sung before such a large crowd, I murmur, pocketing the message for later. I get it, Levy says, offering me a reassuring smile. They're mostly too engrossed in themselves to notice us. She lifts her fiddle, resting the bass against the scoop of her neck. Do you know Ballad of the Fallen Moon? All the warmth drops from my face, a strand of memory wafting through the back of my mind. Stripped of emotion, beauty, pain, the ghost of something I can scarcely grasp, its corpse anchored in my icy nether, the place inside me that's vast like the Ergor Plains I once walked alone, blotches of somebody else's blood frosted to the rags that clung to my skeletal body. Yes, I rasp, I know that song very well. Levy drags her bow across stretched strings of moonplume tail hair that shine in the gloom, carving out the first note, so long and deep it's almost tangible. She plays the next few with such passion it's like she wrote the tune herself. Like the fable's pretty words were tilled from the ashes of her own, caged past. I lift the amplifier to my veiled lips and draw my lungs full, shifting a little so the hidden dagger in my bodice doesn't nudge my rib. I close my eyes and plunge into the melody in the same way I once plunged into life, but with the words I've since learnt how to speak, armored by the horrors I've encountered since. Flaming horrors. Mind-mincing horrors. The crowd dissolves into oblivion as I sing of an inky saber-scythe flying into a black velvet sky, balling up, and dying in the dark, where she'll never be seen again. Of a lustrous moon plume that tucks beside the sooty beast, illuminating her shape, giving her light. I sing of the moon plume's gradual dim, of how little by little, rise by rise, her luster feeds into the saber scythe and turns the creature's scales white, the tune dipping into deeper, more destructive notes as I sing of the moon plume's slipping grip on the sky, of her fall, of the saber scythe unfurling from her perch amongst the stars, full of gifted life and light, soaring to the world below and hunting for her friend, of her scratching through inky shards of rock scattered across the snow, trying to piece her back together again, failing. Lids fluttering open, I become vaguely aware that every pair of eyes in the room is turned to us, watching, wide with greed or wet with emotions that slip down painted cheeks. But it's the cloaked male that steals my attention, the top half of his face still hidden within the shadow cast by his hood. Despite it, his stare reaches through the space and embraces me in an ironclad grip I can't shake. As the words continue to pour from my lips, I become bluntly aware that there's a danger about this male who eclipses everyone else in the room in both size and presence, who stands with the confident ease of someone untouchable. A sobering realization strikes like a blow to the side of my head, my gaze drifting to Tarek, perched in his booth, watching me with such condemning hunger I know I'm not leaving this place without him tailing me. The perfect outcome. Except, I look back to my cloaked observer, into the hooded shadows obscuring his identity. I came here to lure one monster and ended up snagging two. Rave. Chapter 2. Nothing like 7 hours of straight singing without breaks to make you feel like you've swallowed a metal scouring brush, then hacked it straight back up again. Tugging the chain on the privy, I clear my throat, trying to shift the strain from my vocals. I close the lavatory door behind me and move to one of the basins, lathering my hands in suds as I stare at my reflection in the mirror. Powder blue eyes stare back at me, the bottom half of my face obscured by my thick red veil. In stark contrast to my snowy skin, it half clothes my long, inky locks in a dramatic sweep. "You sing like a creator." I look at the female beside me, drying her hands while she studies her own reflection, chin high as she swings her head from side to side, inspecting her perfectly made-up face. "Thank you." "I think." "Could be an insult. Who's to know with these folk?" She looks at my clipped ear. "Seems wasted on a gnome," she muses, like I'm not even here. "Definitely an insult. I'd have Ignos seeding out of the palm of my hand if my voice had that kind of range." I bite my tongue so hard it bleeds, gaze flicking to the red bead dangling from her ear before I dip my head in servitude. "Yes, a true waste for someone the creators did not deem worthy of their songs." She hums, looking at her reflection again while she fixes a tendril of hair into place, seemingly validated by my nod to her ordained superiority. The moment the door swings shut behind her, I roll my eyes, drying my hands. One of these Aurora cycles, I'm going to be forced to bite my tongue so hard I sever the tip. I'm sure of it. The fact that it's still attached is a fucking miracle. Stepping free of the washroom, I see a male leaning against the corridor wall ahead, blocking the only exit besides the lavatory window in the room behind me. I pause on the threshold, holding the door ajar, my heart slapped still by this unexpected development. I thought it'd take longer to lure him in. At the very least, I thought I'd be able to pee in peace before we play. Tarek Relikan stares into the glass he's clutching, swirling an amber liquid, smoke sloshing free. Tangles of red hair hang before his eyes, orange flames barbered into the shorn sides, framing the elemental bead hanging from his lobe like a drip of blood.
You have a sensational voice,
he rumbles, stares still drowning in the depths of his drink.
And the color of your gown.
He tilts his head to the side, flames reflecting in his dark brown eyes that singe me from afar.
Exceptional.
I ease the door shut behind me, sealing myself in the corridor with the mail, mind churning. I've got his attention, now to lure him away from this establishment. I dip my head in thanks, then move to walk past, pausing when he pushes off the wall and turns to face me, further blocking the exit.
Stay,
he mumbles, tipping his glass to his lips. He swallows, purring a smarmy,
drink with me.
My gut knots. His mouth might be saying drink, but his eyes say ugly things that pick you apart, piece by piece, until there's nothing left for the scavengers. You really are a piece of trash.
With a voice like that,
he tacks on, stares sliding down my body like an oily brush, making my skin crawl.
I'm sure your mouth's a fucking delight.
A ball of icy rage gathers within my chest, pulsing with its own violent heartbeat, salivating to end this here. Now. It'd be silly not to. He's asking for it so beautifully. I glance at the closed exit, at the deadbolt right there, only 3 leaping steps away. If I can just get past him and slide it into place, I'll ensure nobody can interrupt this impromptu gathering until the deed is done. Apologies, sir, but it's a long walk home. I must be getting on my way if I'm to rest before the rise. I move, banking for this sliver of space on his right. His hand slams against the wall so hard the sconce flame flutters and my feet still.
I insist,
he grinds out, eyes hardening to dark flints that make something inside me pause. Listen. I weigh the value of locking that door. Risky, yes. But to be fair, I wore the veil for this very reason, on the off chance I'd be forced to escape through a back window with a severed appendage in my pocket. So nobody would pull me aside at a later date after passing me on a stairway, recognizing my face, pinning me as the prime suspect for stashing Tarek Relikan, handless and pulseless, into a privy booth. Screw it. My attention homes, body poised. The tips of my fingers tingle with anticipation as I reach for the dagger within the hidden compartment tailored into my bodice. The door behind Tarek swings open and I curse beneath my breath. We both look over his shoulder at the large, cloaked male who watched me sing all slumber from the back of the room while exuding the stoicism of a stone statue. The hall suddenly feels like a vein swelling with too much hot, pumping blood, like an incinerating storm just crammed between the close-pressed walls and sponged all the oxygen, leaving little for me to breathe. Frustration and anger buck and battle inside me. My hand falls from my bodice, tucking into the gathers of my skirt where I can white-knuckle the fabric without it being obvious. What an unfortunate time to decide he needs to take a piss, though less unfortunate for him. Had he been a few moments later, he would have walked in on something he certainly wouldn't have walked away from. Clearing his throat, Tarek lifts his very lucky hand from the wall and shifts sideways, giving me space to ease past. Honestly, he should use it to shake this male's hand because he absolutely just saved his life. For now.
M'lady,
Tarek bites out, forging a gaudy smile.
Have a creator's blessed slumber.
I battled the urge to let my eyebrows bump all the way into my hairline. Seems I'm not the only one who can sense the combustive energy rolling off this mysterious male. Wish he'd take that energy elsewhere.
Thanks, I mutter, my stabby hand twitching as I move past Tarek and make for the exit, cutting a glance at the hooded male holding the door wide. But his attention isn't on me. It's firmly on Tarek. Odd. Sighing, I weave through the thinning crowd, passing folk fucking in darkened corners or stretched across tabletops. Others lumped in low seaters, comatose, with drinks still tucked in their loosening hands. Some are still with it enough to see me walk by, to chant for me to sing. Sing! Sing! Little do they know, that's exactly what I intend to do. With a chest full of barely restrained violence flexing for release, I make a straight shot for the exit, certain Tarek will be snapping at my heels with unquenched desires of his own. I've probably only got a few moments to spare while the hooded male relieves himself in the lavatory. Only a few moments to get Tarek out of here without the time-consuming tag-along I didn't account for. My already tight schedule is suffocating. Kimori, wait! It takes me 2 steps to register that it's my name being called. Shit. I pause, stemming a below-breath curse before I cut a glance over my shoulder. Levy's packing her instrument in the case she's flopped open across our stools, hair tucked behind her ear as she looks at me, the black smudges beneath her eyes a testament to just how long we sat and performed without breaks or refreshments. Here, she waves a small pouch through the air. Our commission. She steps down off the dais and closes the distance between us. I think the resident Rooney docked some, she says with a roll of her eyes, extending the pouch toward me. But there should be enough for a few hearty meals. Gaze bouncing between her clipped ear, the blossoming round of her belly, and what's left of the dwindling crowd, I reach forward, wrapping my hand around hers, forcing her grip to tighten on the pouch. Keep it, and thank you for playing with me. It was a treasure. A line forms between her brows. I spin, 3 steps closer to the stairway when her voice chases me. Let me walk you home. My heart plops into my belly. My bound will be waiting out front to escort me, she continues. He's a kind, hard-working male who's never hurt a soul. He can escort you, too. I glance over my shoulder, noting the deep-rooted concern in her pretty green eyes. Thank you, but I'm fine. My home is so close, I'll be sleeping by the time you finish clamping the buckles shut on your case. Lie. My home is all the way down the other end of the ditch. At this rate, I'll be lucky to reach it by aurora rise, since I don't intend to walk in that direction once I finally make it outside. I'm 2 steps closer to the exit before her hand wraps around my arm, snagging me despite my fractious nerves galloping ahead at full speed. Levy shoves before me. Face blanched, she peeks around our dim surroundings, leaning close.
I saw the way Tarek was watching you, Kimori. I fear for your safety. This time of slumber isn't kind to the likes of us. Please, let us walk you home.
The determined edge to her voice dilutes my thickening frustration. She's growing on me. I hate when folk grow on me. Scanning our surroundings, I reach into the left pocket of my gown, shred the safety seam with my fingernail, then dig into the hidden compartment, pulling out a small glass orb. Transparent, but for the incarnated depiction of a mythical Elding bird hatching from a bulb of flame caught in the orb's depths.
You don't need to worry about me, I whisper, taking her hand in mine.
Frowning, she drops her gaze, and I loosen my hold just enough for her to glimpse the treasure pressed between our palms, her eyes widening as realization seems to dawn.
Oh,
she says. The word a shaken thing, falling out in crumbled bits, like something inside her just fell apart.
Tarek?
I nod, pocketing the orb I'd hate for her to get caught with. She fills her lungs, but fails to forge the breath into words, releasing a shuddered exhale,
stare caught on her hands, now clasping the swell of her belly. A vision that does something strange to my heart. Makes me feel like it's going to burst, and not in a nice way. I need to get out of here. Take care, I whisper, about to spin again when she grabs my arm. Eyes glazed with unshed emotion, she offers me a fold of parchment. What's that?
My details, in case you want to perform together again,
she whisper rasps, working her lips into a smile that looks more sad than happy. Like perhaps she knows I won't contact her, that we'll never see each other again. I take it anyway, dipping my head in thanks, seeing Tarik emerge from the lavatory and catch my eye. Got you. I pivot toward the stairs and hurry from the Hungry Hollow. In another life, I might have befriended Levy. But so many buts. I think back to someone else I once knew. Someone else with an easy smile and warm regard. A female who's now a vaporous memory that doesn't bang against my ribs or heart. Not after I tied all those heavy, painful parts to a rock now anchored to the bottom of my icy internal lake. Companionship is something I work hard to avoid, and mostly succeed. The harder you care, the more fragile everything seems. Easier to just not. Rave. Chapter 3. Snow spews, fat flakes that catch on my feathered lashes and dust the pave anew, crunching beneath my boots as I walk the dreary ditch almost entirely bare of life at this late hour. Both halves of the immense stone wall tower on either side of me, running parallel from east to west as far as the eye can see. Like two lofty bookcases, the path between them large enough for numerous carts to roll down side by side. The wall wraps around the world's plump belly like a belt, only split down the middle in densely populated segments like right here in Gore. Deep enough that folk seem to feel a sense of safety within the lengthy trench, away from the immediate threat of predators. False as it is, there are just as many down here in this sheltered ditch, if not more. They're just well camouflaged. A silver cell moth splits from a swarm of them churning overhead, fluttering so close its fluffy wings dust me in a spray of luminous powder. I smile. I like this time of slumber, when it feels like it's just me, the cell moths, and the candy-colored clouds. Even though it's not. Even though I've got a monster on my heels. Although Tarik times his footsteps to match mine perfectly, planting his feet almost soft enough to meld with the patter of snow, I sense his presence like a looming shadow threatening to gobble me up. I should be scared, nervous, maybe a little sad for what I'm about to do. Survival's funny. Some wear it like a whisper, others like a scream. Mine's a scorched skeleton of flame-forged rage that keeps me upright, keeps me moving forward. There's not much that's wet and squishy left in my chest. It's all hard and hostile, impervious to things like caring for the likes of Tarik Relikan. In fact, even if he were a pile of shit on the pavement, I'd still go out of my way to stomp on him. Perhaps that makes me a monster too. I don't dissect the thought, shoving it out of the way as I move up a stairway on the inside of the wall's southern half, zigzagging up the levels, past doors shut up for the slumber. I keep going until the wall is just that. Wall. No more dwellings bored into the sides. Folk don't like to live so close to the clouds, the air this far up feeling borrowed, like it doesn't belong to us, like it belongs to the dragons. A shiver scuttles up my spine,
and I turn south down a lengthy wind tunnel that yawns to the view beyond the wall, packed full of clouds so close I could almost reach out and scoop handfuls of their heavy underbellies. When I'm only a few long steps away from the deadly plummet to the ground below, I dig into my pocket and ease off my iron ring, exposing myself to a riot of song that threatens to mince my brain into a fine sludge. Fucking mayhem. The tendons in my neck stretch, the veins in my temples pulsing with too much rushing blood and song. I tune my mind to the highest frequency, like tightening a sound snare, then cap the opening with a sieve, isolating Claude's manic melody blaring at the top of her billowy lungs. The goddess of air works up a howling eddy that makes my veil flutter about, a lopsided grin stretched across my face. She wants to play. So do I. The hairs on the back of my neck lift, Tarek's footsteps drawing closer. Closer. Come on, you slimy fuck. Make your move. His hand latches onto the back of my neck, and he shoves me against the wall face first, using his weight to pin me in place. My skin crawls at the heft of him, the disabling might of a male determined to take whatever he wants. I feign a whimper, a small jostle of desperation. Shh, 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 he rasps against my ear, making my blood curdle.
Be a good little null.
Rage explodes beneath my ribs as I consider how many others he's done this to. How many have been swallowed by his gluttonous greed like they're nothing more than a snack. No more. I lift my boot and bite down on the metal cap crowning my back molar. With a click, an iron pin spears free from my heel.
Gliteano viri.
I whisper sing, the words a strangled ache in my mouth, spat free, coaxing Claude to siphon almost every wisp of air from Tarek's lungs. She giggles. Tarek sucks a strangled gasp through the compacting organs, and I stomp the nullifying pin through the top of his boot. Biting down on the cap a second time, I shoot the pin so deep between Tarek's fine bones and tendons that the only way to be rid of it is to hack through his own ankle and sever the appendage. Precautions. I doubt Claude would loosen her hold on his lungs, but damned if I'm letting him set Ignos on me with a few blazing words. The god of fire loves to feast, and I'd rather be skinned alive than have him gnaw on me. Again. Tarek's grip loosens, and he stumbles back, limping, boots scuffing against the snow while I brush my hands down my gown and straighten myself. Tarek fucking Renekin, I mutter, easing the ruined dragon scale blade from the secret pocket of my bodice, this one sharp enough to cut through bone like butter. I turn, head cocked to the side, looking right into his wide, bloodshot eyes, anticipation prickling in the tips of my fingers. Are you having a creator's blessed slumber? His eyes bulge, then narrow on the blade I'm twirling. He loses his footing, crumbling against the far wall, mouth agape while he claws at his throat. Guess that's a no. His chest convulses, barely a thread of breath whistling down his windpipe, doing little to inflate his suctioned lungs. Just enough to keep him present until he's heard my well-prepared speech. Once, I watched somebody drop a line beneath an icy lake and reel a long, slithering eel to the surface. It squirmed in the snow, iridescent scales glinting as its mouth gaped and gaped until it became chillingly still. This game always reminds me of that, except I felt sorry for the eel. I feel nothing for Tarek, bar the ferocious desire to slit his throat before he ruins any more lives. But not yet. First, he needs to suffer. I move forward, gaze flicking between his hands, trying to decide on a preference. Tricky.
they're both so similar. One of the other Elding Blades might have eased you into death the gentle way, I muse, deciding on the right. I grip it and yank, slicing my blade through his wrist so fast I'm certain he doesn't realize what's happened until I'm waving the severed appendage at him. Probably would have done this after you were dead. Unfortunately for Tarik, I have a special well of rage I reserve specifically for folk like him. He gawks at me, clawing at his neck as if his hand is still attached, blood spewing from the gory stub, his mouth so wide I can see his tonsils. Perhaps I should explain, I say, pulling a wax bag from my pocket. I stuff my new hand inside and tug the drawstring tight. You see, I was roaming the Undercity and stumbled upon your little business. Little is an understatement. His sprawling establishment is like a city of its own, fit with an amphitheater-sized battle pit, sleep suites for those who never want to miss a duel, and cells of caged children. Nulls he's snatched off the wall, or purchased from desperate parents who lack the wealth to keep them fed, certain they're buying their younglings a fighting chance at life, a chance to battle their way to supremacy. None of them looked malnourished, but there's more than one way to starve a soul. I tried to free your captives, some of whom, I might add, were in dire need of a healer to mend their small, broken bodies. I waved the laden bag at him, shrugging. Imagine my disappointment when I discovered I required your handprint to open their cells. I can tell by the panicked look in his eyes that he's not imagining hard enough, that he's too caught up thinking about himself. I lump the bag on the ground atop a pile of snow that's blown in as he fumbles, jabs his remaining hand into his pocket, and yanks out a blade. I seize it from his paltry grip, clicking my tongue before I stab it through his thigh. Not that I knew who you were at that point, I murmur, watching him quiver and convulse, relishing it. His face turns redder than his garb, the veins in his temples and neck bulging as I slice his blood-red tunic open, bare his chest, then snag his other hand that won't stop grabbing at me. I hoist it high, flatten it against the wall, and use my blade to pin it in place so I can focus on my task. His entire body spasms again, wetness leaching down his trousers. Funniest thing, the next day your bound found a way to reach out to us. You know who we are, of course. The Fir Duath. From the ashes. His features crumble. I lift my skirt and pull another blade from the inside of my boot. She's lovely, you're bound. Striking. I'd barter the entire contents of my coffers that you purchased her, too, hoping the brown bead she wears would guarantee you powerful offspring. More strangled jerks, his heaving chest slicked red from the blood pulsating free of his severed stub. It doesn't elude me that he's now painted in the color he loves so much, the color he boasts. Head tilted to the side, I study my crimson canvas, dragging the tip of my blade across the expanse of his chest. I plant a little pressure down the length and begin to carve my crude code into his flesh. She said you do terrible things to her. To others, I say while I slice, slice, slice. To anybody you can get your grubby mitts on. R. Rapist. The letter weeps more of his favored color as he squirms, his mouth wide in a silent scream. Beautiful, blessed silence. I could kiss Claude at times like this. She also mentioned that although you don't make your null son fight in your prestigious Undercity battle pit, you often call upon Ignos to paint him in flames for being such a great disappointment to your bloodline. The words are forced past gritted teeth, that immense, icy presence within me shifting, rumbling. I carve a C, then an A. Child abuser.
I'm tempted to give him the entire alphabet, but time is of the essence. Instead, I finish him off with three more letters. A-S-S. Self-explanatory. The wind becomes a cutting torrent, whistling around corners, lifting my veil, bearing me. I don't bother trying to cover up, wondering if he still likes my voice, the color of my dress, if he regrets following me, trying to assault me against the wall. His chest jerks to the manic tune of Claude's twirling giggles, practically hanging from his hand nailed to the wall while treasured breath squeaks through his throat. Ignace started speaking to your daughter. Did you know? His face contorts, bearing deeper folds of agony as his boots gouge the blood-steeped snow. She's been escorted out of the city, this slumber, along with the rest of your family, but not before your bound told us everything we need to extinguish your fucked-up operations and set those younglings free. Take them somewhere safe and secure, where they can learn to be children again. I repeat Claude's suffocating tune, and she flicks around me at a voracious speed, churning my hair into an inky mess while Tarek's face turns blue, then purple. How does it feel to be nulled, Tarek? His now bleeding eyes take in the lobe of my ear, the one supposed to be pierced with a transparent bead to signify my ability to hear Claude's ever-changing, riotous song. Way I see it, it would only serve to single me out as a threat to the Fade's militant society. Fuck their system. How does it feel to suffer at the hands of someone beneath you? Still smacking his throat with his mangled arm, his mouth shapes a single word. Mercy. An eviscerating rage torches my spine, licking around my ribs, feasting on my cold, black heart. I wonder how many times the younglings who fought in his pit of death pleaded for that very thing. How many times his son said the word, looking up at the male who was supposed to nurture him, protect him. I wonder how many times hope perished in his small chest before he begged his ma to seek us out, to break free.